want to talk about today a very sensitive and important topic that people tend to neglect, is the role and the place of a woman in the Jewish world. Because there's a misconception that people think that in the Jewish religion that the women are neglected and that they're not important and that they don't get any credit. And people come and very easily distort the reality by saying, oh, the Torah doesn't give any credit to the woman. And in the Jewish religion, the women, they have to cover themselves and they have to be modest and they don't get any respect and any acknowledgement. And whoever's looking from the outside, it appears like the women in the Jewish religion are considered in a much lower place. Which unfortunately is just a misconception. Like any person that's looking at the religion from the outside, we're always going to find what to complain about. Because when I don't want to be on the winning team, then I'm complaining against the team. So it's very easy to look at the Jewish religion from the outside and complain and say, this is not good, this is not right, this is not fair, I don't agree with it. These are just excuses of people when they don't want to follow the Torah. So they'll find under the ground all the excuses to make the Torah not true and to disqualify the Torah, and therefore say, oh, see, I don't like it, so I'm not participating. Or I don't want to follow. So unfortunately, these are just excuses. Because if I don't want to do something, I'll find the excuse why not to do it. So when people don't want to follow the Torah, so they find an excuse. And they say, oh, because of this, I don't agree with it, or it's not true, and therefore I don't want to do it. But it's just hiding behind the fact and the reality that I just don't want to, or I don't feel comfortable doing it. Just the other day, a young lady approached me and she told me that she can't get married and what should she do, and she was looking for all sorts of hocus pocus. Give me a segula, give me a remedy, give me a bracha. I told her, there's no shortcuts in the Torah. There's no word in the Torah called segula, remedy. So this is the Torah does not allow to take shortcuts. The Torah says, you want the bracha? You follow what the Torah says. Don't go, you know, behind the back to the rabbi and tell him, give me a bracha. I mean, the bracha is good. The bracha will work. But the bracha will only work if you create a vessel to receive the bracha. I can stand here till 10 o'clock at night and give you brachot. But if you don't have how to hold the bracha is worthless. You have to create what's called a vessel. If I want to now give you a very expensive wine and I want to pour it into a cup and to give you to drink from this expensive wine, if you don't hand me out a cup, the bracha, the wine is going to fall on the floor. So to go to a rabbi and ask for a bracha, it's good. But if you don't want to prepare a vessel, the bracha is worthless. And then when people come and they want a shortcut, give me a segula, tell me what to do, this and that. The Torah doesn't. That's not the approach of the Torah. The Torah tells you, follow the Torah, I'll give you the bracha. We just read it 2 weeks ago in the parasha. If you follow the Torah, I'll give you anything you want. Very simple. So this young lady approached me the other day. And she was like, why am I not getting married? And what should I do? And I told her, I remember you from last year. You asked me the same question. And I gave you the same answer last year that I'm going to give you tonight. Follow the Torah. Told her, keep Shabbat. So her answer was, it's too hard. That was the answer, it's too hard. So I told her, what's harder, to keep Shabbat or to be lonely? You choose which one is harder for you. If you think Shabbat, to keep Shabbat is hard, fine. But don't complain that you're lonely. You choose which one is harder for you. But I told her, I don't have a magic to pull out of my pocket and tell you, here, read this line and everything will be okay. The Torah doesn't, that's not the approach of the Torah. I told her, what do you want me to give you a hocus pocus here? That doesn't work. If you're looking for hocus pocus, it's never going to work. The Torah is very clear. Keep the Torah, follow the Torah, and you'll get whatever you need to get. So the point is that a lot of people looking at the Torah from the outside, and they don't like what they see, because it seems like the Torah is very demanding. You have to do this, you have to do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. When a person is looking from the outside, says, I don't like this I don't like this deal. It's too much. It's taking away from my freedom. I can't do this, I can't do that. So a lot of people, in order to justify why they don't want to be part of it, so they point, oh, this I don't accept, this is like this and like that. And that's why many people looking at the Torah and they point, oh, the Torah is very against women. And the Torah is not including women. And the Torah is not giving enough respect to women. Which is a complete opposite. The complete opposite. It's very easy to point in the Torah and say, oh, the Torah is very chauvinistic. It's not. It's a complete opposite. So Bezat Hashem, I want to talk about tonight the virtue and the power of a woman and the role of a Jewish woman in the Jewish world. Because when a person knows his powers, then he knows how to utilize it. If a person is extremely smart, but nobody comes and tells him that he's smart and he can do something with his wisdom, then he's not going to do anything. The thing is that a person needs to be enticed and to be inspired to understand who they are and what they're worth. So it all starts, as usual, in the first week of creation, when Adam and Chava were created, Adam and Eve. So of course, again, the first Te'ana, the first example is, they say, oh, see, the man was created first. Therefore, the Torah is made, thinking the Torah, the husband is more important. But first of all, we know, based on the teaching of the Zohar, that Adam and Chava were born in one body, just that Adam was in the front and Chava, Eve, was in the back. They were just connected, like originally how a husband and wife should be, connected, they're one body. Later on, the Kadosh Baruch already separated them. But always you can look at it in a way and say, oh, the Torah first created the man. But one can argue and say, yeah, he created man first to get everything ready, that when the woman comes in, it's all set and ready for her. So there's an argument for everything. And of course, a lot of people point on the Torah and say, oh, they blame the sin of the apple, it's not an apple, but they blame the sin of Adam and Chava on Chava. Right? That's what most people say. People say it was her fault. It's wrong. It was Adam's fault. Why? Because he didn't tell her all the information. He didn't tell her you're not allowed to eat from the tree. He just told her you're not allowed to touch the tree. He didn't tell her you're not allowed to eat. Very good. No communication. Adam, he couldn't communicate the right way. He thought that she'll figure it out. Now, we're not coming to point fingers now who's more at fault, but the reality is, because a lot of people say, oh, everybody's blaming Chava for everything. No, the Torah is very clear about it, that Adam did not tell her all the information. He just told her, don't touch the tree. So when the snake came to her and told her, touch the tree. And she said, no, my husband said we're not allowed to touch the tree. He didn't tell her you're not allowed to eat from it. And of course, the snake just pushed her on the tree and she saw that nothing happened. And he told her, you see, nothing happened. Here, you touched it. Now you can eat from it. And if you eat from it, your eyes are going to open and you're going to be like a god. So really, if you want to blame somebody, it's Adam. It's not Chava. He just didn't say the right information. He was withholding information. Now again, we're not talking Lashon Hara about Adam. There's a reason why. Everything has a cause for that. There's a reason why there was supposed to be the sin. It wasn't by mistake that somebody messed up the script. That was part of the script. The script was that it had to happen. But the reality again, that constantly people point fingers on the Torah and say, you see, the Torah is not giving enough power and respect to the woman. But the reality again, it's the complete opposite. And the first time that we see where the Torah gives the most respect for a woman is with Sarah Imeno. And the Torah says very, very clearly that Sarah was a greater prophet than Avraham Avinu. To a point that the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, "Kol ma sheSarah ishtecha omeret lecha, shma bekola." Whatever your wife Sarah tells you, you better listen to her. And the Torah is very clear about that Sarah was a much greater prophet than Avraham Avinu. As Avraham Avinu got most of the credit, so to say, but even Avraham Avinu says that all the credit goes to Sarah. Now, there's a reason why in many places in the Torah the woman is not getting the credit. I see it in a way that when a person gets the credit, you know what it does to him? Inflates the ego. That's why men have a very big ego. Because in most cases, they get the credit. You know, there's a saying here in America, behind any successful man, there's a supportive woman, or, you know, I heard it in different versions, a supportive woman, a loving woman. But the reality is, that's the reality. But who gets the credit? The husband. Why? To inflate the ego. So on, if you're looking at it in a different way, better not to get the credit. You know, some lady yesterday in the lecture, she got up in the end of the lecture and started telling people to listen to my lectures, and she listens to my CDs, and she for 10 minutes was going on and on, and I told her, Givenet, please sit down. Our sages teach us, you don't praise a person in his presence. Chas v'shalom, he's not going to have a little bit of a ego going on. Oh, yeah. It's not a good thing. So, be'etzem, when you're looking at it, maybe the Torah is putting the limelight over the men in many, many cases, but that's just doing chesed to the woman. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Kol kevuda bat melech penima. The real honor of a daughter of a king is concealed and it's hidden. That's why the women are not so out and obvious in the Torah. Because the honor is for the one who's concealing it, for hiding it. And where do you really see that the honor and the kavod goes to something that is concealed? Look at the Sefer Torah. You see a Sefer Torah here on the shelf? No. A Sefer Torah is hidden in a holy ark. And it's covered with a kisui, with a cover. And another cover. And it's hidden. And only once in a blue moon you take it out. You don't just leave the Sefer Torah here on the chair. The books, yeah. Books you can put on the bookshelf. Tefillin you can put on the desk. Mezuzot you hang on the wall. But a Sefer Torah you put it in an Aron Kodesh. And only 3 times a week you take it out. And on holidays. And even when you take it out, there's a parochet, there's a curtain, and another cover, and another cover, and another cover. And when you open it, oh, you open it for a couple of minutes and you close it. Why? Because when something is valuable, you hide it. If you have now millions of dollars worth of jewelry, you don't put it on your table in the kitchen. You put it in the safe. You put your money in the safe. You don't put it on the table. Why? Because you want to hide what is valuable. Unfortunately, in this world, it kind of got a little bit messed up. And some people like showing everybody what they have, even if they don't have anything. Which is a problem. That's why a lot of people, you know, they come to me and they tell me I have a lot of ayin hara, a lot of evil eye. Yes, so don't show everything where everybody what you have. You're not going to have ayin hara. Ayin hara can only control something that is out in the obvious. That's why it's good to be modest and to be humble. That's what the Torah teaches us. Don't do, I don't know if you say it in Farsi, in Arabic, you say shafuni anas. I don't know if it's the same in Parsi. Shafuni anas, look at me. The point is that whatever is out in the open has control from an evil eye or jealousy. Evil eye is one thing. Evil eye is the real thing, by the way. People think it's an invention. No, it's a real thing. And there's something that is called jealousy. Now, the same way with Lashon Hara. If I speak Lashon Hara, then the person who's hearing the Lashon Hara is just as guilty as me. And the person that I'm speaking of is also going to get punished for that. But the same thing with jealousy. If I cause another person to be jealous at me, jealousy is a very big sin. Not allowed to be jealous. It's mamash to go against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. To say, oh, I'm jealous of this person that he has like this and that. I don't agree with what the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me. But the one who causes the person to be jealous is also at fault. Some people say that there's a halakha in the Torah. It's called lo titen michshol bifnei iver. Don't put a stumble block in front of a blind person. So we see when the Torah wants to give kavod, to honor to something, it covers it. And it conceals it. And it puts it away. If I'm now going to come out into this room with a book, with a sidur, who's going to come to me? But if I'm going to come with a Sefer Torah, everybody gets up. Everybody comes to touch it, to kiss it. So the woman is compared to a Sefer Torah, to something holy, to something that you conceal, something that you cover. And the Torah tells a woman to be covered, it's not to restrict her or to make her feel not desired or wanted. No, it's you're holy, you have to be covered. You want to conceal it, you want to hide it. And you know who's the first one who was modest, who concealed himself? Kadosh Baruch Hu. No, the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because in Gan Eden, Adam and Chava, they saw him. Everybody saw the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Not everybody. Adam and Chava, they saw the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And right when they opened their eyes by eating from the forbidden fruit, the first thing that he did is he covered himself. Kadosh Baruch Hu covered himself. Nobody sees the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Why don't we see him? First of all, if we would see him, there wouldn't be an option bechlal of what's called a free choice. Everybody would be more religious than me. That's first of all. But more than that, what respect would you give another person when you the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you see him all the time? You wouldn't give any respect. Oh, it's my buddy. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu was the first one that was modest and covered himself for respect. I am not your friend. You're not coming and approach me like as if I'm your friend. I'm way beyond you. So we learn from that that the ones that get the most respect are the ones who are covered and concealed and modest. So therefore we see in the Torah in many different places that the woman, hey, maybe she wasn't in the lights, but everything was given to the woman. And we see with all our matriarchs. First of all, we see how Sarah, she got old. Basically, everything was in her merit. And then we see with Rivka, same thing later on with Leah and Rachel. But we see in many places in history how great the greatest sages, they always put their wife on a pedestal. And one of the most famous stories was with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, until he was 40, was a shepherd, was a simple shepherd. He didn't even know how to read. And at the time, there was a certain individual who was like the Bill Gates of the generation. His name was Kalba Savoa. And he was the richest man in the generation. Literally like a Bill Gates. And at the time, his daughter wanted to marry this shepherd, Rabbi Akiva. And he told her, if you're going to marry him, I'm going to disown you. And she was like, no, that's the one I want to marry. And of course he disowned her, and she lived like a completely poor person. But she saw the greatness in Rabbi Akiva. And of course later on, he became the great sage that he became. First of all, he went to yeshiva to study for 12 years. When he came back after 12 years, he overheard his wife Rachel talking to her friend and saying, if I could, I would send him to another 12 years. So he made a U-turn and went back to yeshiva. And then when he came back after 24 years with thousands of students, you have to understand, Rabbi Akiva, we don't even have anybody in our generation that we can even compare to what's Rabbi Akiva. And then of course his wife came to greet him, and she came with shmatez. She didn't come with Fendi clothes. She came with shmatez. She was poor. And everybody was pushing her away. No, 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 you can't come close to the Rebbe. And he told them no. And he bowed down to her, and he told everybody, all our Torah is because of her. My Torah and your Torah is because of her. Because she worked hard to support my studying, and all the Torah goes to her. And like this, there are numerous stories in the Torah that basically, exactly like, you know, all the sayings that we have here in America are not invented out of somebody just invented them. So if they say here, behind every successful man is a supporting woman or a loving woman, there's a myth to it, there's a truth to it. Unfortunately, in our generation, there was too many stages that went that it got completely twisted and distorted, that it became part of our awareness that kivyachol, one might think, the husband is the one who has to get all the respect, and the husband is the head of the family, and the husband, and the husband, and the husband. But the reality is not like that. It's just a distortion of many generations. But really, most of the honor and the kavod and the respect belongs to the woman. And one of the basic things where you can really point on it is that we as men have to serve God from morning to night. All 630 mitzvot we have to do. A woman is exempt from most of the mitzvot. Most of them. Why? She doesn't have to even do it. I have to work hard all day long to reach to a certain level. A woman doesn't have to do it. I have to pray three times a day. A woman has to pray only once. I have to put tefillin on and tzitzit and so many things and learn Torah and all these mitzvot. I have to do it as a man. A woman doesn't have to do it. Why? Because by default she's already in a much higher level. She doesn't have to climb so high to reach for it. All she needs to do is a few actions and that's it. And she taps into her source. Now if you want to look at it in a mystical way, in the teachings of Kabbalah we have 10 sefirot in the world above. That everything comes down to this world through these sefirot. Sefirot is like these levels that it has to come down and manifest through each level in order to materialize and come down into this world. Like if you want to take now a finished product, you look at a suit. If you're looking at the finished product, it's a nice suit. But go now all the stages back. You know where the suit started? On a piece of animal, on a sheep, if it's wool or whatever. And then it had to be processed. And then the wool had to be processed into strings. And then the strings had to become a fabric. And then the guy traveled to the other side of the world to buy the fabric and shipped it to a different country. And then they put it in a plant. And then they sold it in the designer. Look how many stages it went to come to a nice finished product. So this world that we're looking at, that's the finished product. But the stages, if you go back, these are all these sefirot. Every stage, it goes through one sefira. Sefira is, you can translate it as to count, lispor. But sefira also comes from the word sapir. Sapir is to enlighten, light. Because the godly light that shines from the world above, it has to go through levels. And it goes through one level to another level, exactly like I gave the example of the final product. The world is the final product. So when Kabbalah teaches us and compares the sefirot to a man and a woman, then the woman comes from one of the most highest sefirot, from what's called Bina. And the man is way beneath her. The man is compared to what's called Zeir Anpin, to the six midot. But the entire hashpa'ah, the influence that the man gets, it's only from the woman. And then the lowest sefira, which is called Malchut, seems like it's getting everything from the man, from the six sefirot. But Be'etzem, all the worlds, there's one world above another world and another world. So the Malchut, the Sefira of Malchut, which is considered the lowest, is actually above the highest Sefira of the next world, which is called Ketel. So either way you're looking at it,
highest in the next world.
Yeah.
This world is lowest.
In this world. But the women, where she originates from, she comes from the highest world. You know, at the time of Mashiach, it says that Nekevat Tesovev Gever, that the whole role is going to change, that the woman is going to be in control and it's going to be revealed. Now it's not revealed. But the Hashpa'ah, the influence that the man gets, it comes from the woman. And if the man is a smart man, then he lets his woman give him this Hashpa'ah, this influence. Unfortunately, we're going to do questions at the end. But we see another proof how the woman is considered in a much higher level than a man, is that the woman has the power to give birth. A man cannot do anything. You put now 1,000 men on an island, they can't do anything. You can take a woman now, and even in a artificial way, she can get pregnant. Technically, women don't even need men. But just the fact that a woman got the power to give birth, that in itself is a fact and a testimony that what's her level. And not only that, it even says that the pain that a woman goes through in birth, assuming that she doesn't take an epidural, today everybody's very, very spoiled. Spoiled. It's easy to get an injection, but for thousands of years they didn't get an injection. But they say that the pain that the woman is going through during childbirth, if a man would had to go through this pain, he would die from the pain. That's what they say. Not only that, so now I'm going to add another thing, maybe you can translate that too. Even physically, the skull of a woman is a much more stronger skull. And a man's skull is very weak. Because if a man would have to have the pressure, like in childbirth, the skull will explode. This is physically. Ask a doctor. A woman's skull is much more stronger because of the pressure of childbirth than the skull is staying in one piece. But regardless to that, you see the power of a woman because God chose her to be the channel to bring life into the world. That in itself is a raya, is a proof of the level where Hashem, how Hashem looks at a woman and not at a man. A man is just delivering the material. That's it. He's a delivery boy. That's it. The woman is everything. And even if you're looking how it's developed, the husband only brings the sperm, and that's it, and he gives it. The woman develops a fetus for 9 months. She has a factory. She's able to dissect the sperm and to bring out from it the power of growth and to start developing a child. So really, if you're looking at it, the one who got all the honor and all the respect and the most powerful part is the woman. And there is numerous places in the Torah where it's proving how the woman is a much more important in the role. You know, in Hebrew, a woman, she's called Akeret Bait. Akeret Bait, in Hebrew, people think it's the woman, the one who does mopping the floor. But Akeret Bait comes from the word Ikar Bait, the main part of the house. And the woman is the main part of the house. The Torah teaches us that a man can learn all day long Torah, from morning to night, the whole week. If at the time on Friday evening when the woman is lighting candles, she's not accepting the Torah of her husband, he can't come into the house and his Torah is worthless. To a point that when the woman is lighting candles, she has to have in her mind that she's willing to accept the mitzvot that her husband did, and then she actually gets part of it. Because if I learn Torah, my wife gets the credit. If I do a mitzvah, then my wife gets the credit. She doesn't have to put tefillin on. A woman doesn't have to put tefillin on because her husband does it for her. And if she doesn't have a husband, then her potential husband does it for her. And if she doesn't, then she wants to make sure that her son does it for her. But the woman is exempt from the physical act because the husband is the worker. The husband goes to work, he brings the check, the woman takes the check. That's how it works. If you want to look at it in a physical way. But only if she's accepting it. There's a beautiful teaching that, you know, when on Friday night, what's the first thing that we do when the husband comes home from synagogue? We sing Shalom Aleichem. If you notice in the song Shalom Aleichem, there are four verses. In some congregations, they do five. But the first one, we sing Shalom Aleichem, Malachei Asharet, and then we continue, right? And then all the rest of them, is Boachem leshalom, Baruchuni leshalom, but who? What would we continue? Malachei Shalom, not Malachei Asharet. Nobody noticed it because nobody ever asked why. Why the first line is Malachei Asharet and the rest are Malachei Shalom. So we learn that when the husband comes home from the synagogue on Friday night, he has two angels escorting him. On the right side is standing one of Hashem's angels, a good one. But on the left side stands the Samech Mem, the Satan, the Malach HaMavet. Now, there are two types of Malachim in Shemayim. Malachim is an angels. Angels. Malachei Asharet are the ones, Sharet means to serve, are all the angels. It's like a general term for all the angels. But then there's a high level angel that is called Malachei HaShalom, the angels of peace. And there are high level angels. So in the beginning comes in one good angel, from the Torah he did all, learned all week, and the mitzvot he did all week. Even if he barely did anything, he still probably did something. But on the other side stands Malach HaMavet. He's part of the army. He's Malachei Asharet. Now when they walk into the house, there are two options. If they walk into the house and they find candles that are lit up, and challah on the table, and a set table, and the house is nice and calm, and the woman is dressed nice for Shabbat, and everything is prepared for Shabbat, then Malach HaMavet becomes Malachei HaShalom. He gets transformed. He does tshuva. Hashem twists him. No mitah, there's no klipah on Shabbat. Malach HaMavet becomes one of Malachei HaShalom. If Chas V'Shalom, they walk into the house and they don't see lights in the candles, or challah on the table, and better the challah that the woman do, not what she bought it here in the bakery, and a beautiful home and everything is set, then Malach HaMavet doesn't become from Malachi HaShalom. He stays Malachi HaSharet. And then, you know, Hashem Erachem. But we want to welcome and to think, you know, a normal person who will sing Shalom Aleichem, most likely there will be candles lit up in a challah and a Shabbat table. But we see from that the one who's controlling everything, it's only the woman. The woman is the one who will be accepting the Torah into the house or not. So a man can do whatever he wants. If the woman does not allow it to come in or to be accepted, it's worthless. Unfortunately, in our generation, the men are not educated because the rabbis in their shuls are not telling them their role. And unfortunately, in our generation, how the world evolved is it seems like the man is the valuable one and then the ego is totally out of control. You know, I just noticed a couple days ago something very interesting. Maybe I'm wrong, but that was my observation. Because I went to many different places, different neighborhoods. I'm now on tour in the United States. And I noticed, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I am wrong. I noticed in every driveway, the fancier car is for the husband and the minivan is for the wife.
No, that's not wrong.
So it depends on the neighborhood. I know. I'm talking about in normal neighborhoods. The husband is driving like this fancy car and the woman is stuck with the minivan. The point is, look, I know some neighborhoods it doesn't work like that. I'm talking about in the most of the world. But I noticed it just was a funny observation. I was like, why shouldn't the wife drive the convertible Mercedes and let the husband drive the minivan? Why? It's this distorted role in the world that, oh, the husband, he has to be like the chashuv. No. It doesn't work like that. It's a misconception and it's the wrong education. I'm not saying, I'm just making it also in a funny way with the cars. I don't care what people drive. It's nonsense. Drive whatever you want. The point is that it was just a funny observation that why does the husband get the fancy car? He can also drive a minivan. I take my kids to school. Nothing's wrong with taking the kids to school. That's the problem, is that the husbands are not educated. That they have to be part of the house and they have to help with the kids and they have to help with everything. It's actually the husband's mitzvah to educate the kids, not the wife. The husband has to teach the kids to run and educate them. Vishinantem levanecha. He doesn't say vishinanten. She says vishinantem. A mem goes to the man. A nun goes to the women. The man has to educate it. Again, it's all brought down to a distorted educating system. In the olden days, there wasn't female teachers. There was male teachers. The men used to teach. The men used to work and teach. So the point is, not to chas v'shalom l'asei lashon hara about the men. And for sure, I strongly suggest to you, don't go home and start telling your husband, the rabbi told me, because that's just going to cause a shalom bayit problem. But women are much more smarter. A woman got what's called bina yetira, an extra sense of wisdom. In essence, women are much more smarter than men. And if a woman is smart, she knows how to use this bina yetira, this extra level of bina. Bina is wisdom. Now, in the teachings of Kabbalah, we have two mothers. We have Rachel and we have Leah. Rachel corresponds to the Sfira of Malchut, and Leah corresponds to the Sfira of Bina. Rachel is called Ima Tata'a, low-level mother, and Leah is called a higher-level mother, Ima Ila'a. The role of the woman in this world is to connect these two Sfirot together. That's the role of the woman, that's it.
What Sfira?
The Sfira of Malchut. Rachel is Malchut. Is the lowest Sfira, which is a queen. And Bina is the second Sfira from the top, which is wisdom. Not wisdom, it's wisdom is Chokhmah. Bina is
wise.
Wisdom. So the woman's role is to connect these two Sfirot, the Malchut and the Bina, together. And she uses the husband how to just to communicate, because if you look at the Sfirot, the man, what's called the Zeir Anpin, all the Sfirot in between, corresponds to the man, and they're just connecting. The woman is just connecting. That's why there's one Yaakov and two mothers. Like, why didn't Yitzchak get two wives? Why didn't Avraham Avinu get two wives? Why nobody got two wives? Not Moshe Rabbeinu, not David and Melech. Only Yaakov got two wives.
It had to be 12 Shvatim.
It has nothing to do with the Shvatim. We're not going to do a class about why, about the two wives. But if you're looking at it, I'm just throwing to you some information that you may have some question marks in your mind. How come only Yaakov Avinu got two wives? There's a reason for that. Because Yaakov came to build, like you said, the 12 Shvatim, came to build the nation of Israel. That's why his name was changed to Israel. And therefore, he needed both mothers coming from a spiritual world to be able to do that. That's why we see that Yaakov, he has two names. Nobody has two names. Avraham Avinu has one name. Yitzchak has a name. Moshe Rabbeinu has a name. Everybody has one name. Yaakov is the only one who has two names, Israel and Yaakov. Because it's two levels in the soul of a Jew. There's a level that is called Israel, Lirosh, a higher level. This is a higher part of our neshama. And Yaakov is Yud Akev. Akev is a heel. This is a lower level of the neshama. It's two different ways how we serve the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the point is that the main role of the woman is only to connect these two sefirot together. That's her role. That's why she's not occupied with mitzvot. That's why she's not occupied with anything else. The point is to get to the point for the woman to understand that. It's not your part to educate your husband. What's his role in his life? Your part is to send him to the kollel or to the yeshiva or to the rabbi to learn, and hopefully you find a normal rabbi that will tell him, go and respect your wife. And go listen to your wife. And go put your wife on a pedestal. Because everything you have is because of her. Bichlal that we know, everything comes from the wife. The bracha for the house only comes from the wife. The parnasa only comes from the wife. The children, everything comes from the wife. The wife is the channel of the bracha. To a point that the Gemara says that misken, oy vavoy, the poor man, that one tear will come out of the woman's eye. Poor man, the one who caused her to have this one tear. So the woman has to understand, first of all, her importance and her role. And her role is not to fight with the husband. Don't try to educate your husband because you're not going to be able to do it. Men are not so smart. They maybe do know how to do business, but not more than that. They're not on a higher level to receive it. And I'm not chas v'shalom saying lashon hara about men. I'm one of them. I just know how they behave and how they react. Your point is to understand your power. And if you understand your power, you know how to operate it. Because if you don't know what you're worth or how powerful you are, you don't know how to apply it. The point is to understand how holy and special and sacred is a woman. For the point that the Torah says, no, I don't need you under the flashlight, in the lamplight. I don't need you to be all famous and everybody clapping their hands to you. You don't need that. Because if chas v'shalom, a woman has an ego, oy vavoy, where that will take her. A man, egos are very much out of control. A woman, that's not in her level. A woman doesn't need this to be elevated to a higher level. A woman just needs to pray 5 minutes, she'll be already in a much higher level. 10 minutes reading Tehillim, she already goes what a man can take him a whole week to do. But the point to take from this is something very simple, that women are extremely, extremely holy, to a point that our sages say that Bizchut Nashim Tzadkaniot Yetzanu Mimitzrayim, with the merit of righteous women, we went out of Mitzrayim. We only went out of exile because of the merit of righteous women. And it says, Bizchut Nashim Tzadkaniot Nitzei Ma'agalut, with the merit of the righteous women in our generation, we're going to leave this exile. So your role is beyond important. And first of all, you have to recognize it. You have to understand that a woman is extremely, extremely holy. A woman is like a Sefer Torah. I said that before. And a woman is holy like a Sefer Torah. You know, somebody asked me a few days ago, what do I think about these women who go to the Kotel and they put tefillin on and they read from the Torah and they make a whole show there? And I told them, listen, I don't like going into politics. It's politics. It's a show. It's not a real thing. If you follow all these women at home, I guarantee to you, they don't put tefillin on every day. And they don't eat kosher at home, guarantee. And they don't keep Shabbat. They don't do anything. It's just a show. It's a propaganda. It's to make a fight. It's to make an argument. They're not really doing it. If you would follow them home, and you see they're really doing it, fine. But they don't. It's just to provoke a fight. And a lot of people say, how come Bemet women are not allowed to? Why? That's not fair. I also want to go up to the Torah. Why can't I go up to the Torah? Women tell me, I want to put tefillin on. So if you want to look at it in a very superficial way, first of all, the Torah commanded the man to do it. So you listen to what the Torah says. But if you want to look at it in a spiritual way, a woman is a queen. And the Torah is called a queen. You can't have two queens in the same room. It's not respectful. You cannot have a woman next to the Torah because a woman is a queen and the Torah. Who will you give more respect, to the woman or to the Torah? It's two queens in one room. They cannot share the crown. It's not nice. It's not respectful, not to the woman and not to the Torah. So you separate them. That's one of the many reasons why you have the mechitza in the shul. Not for the men to look like this. Don't worry, they look like this in the street. They don't need the mechitza in the Beit Knesset. It's not respectful. You have a group, you have a queen in the room. Your queen walks into the room, people have to get up. I don't know many men that get up when their wife walks into the home. Unfortunately. The point is that this is where it's misconception and a distortion. The people say, oh, the women are neglected. They're not neglected. They have much more respect. It's not respectful for the queen to pull out another queen into the room. The point is, what you need to take from today is to understand how special you are and how holy you are and how much more holy you are than anything else, to a point that you are exempt from almost everything. And everything that you do is much more powerful. A woman who prays one time a day is like a man praying a whole week. A woman learns half an hour of Torah. It's like a man learning a whole day Torah. She doesn't have to do much. The women are powerful. You know, there's a very big question in the Torah because Rivka could not get pregnant. For 37 years, Rivka could not get pregnant. And it says in the Torah that at some point she told Yitzchak, can you also pray? I'm praying here for so many years. Help me. So it says that Yitzchak also prayed and up, she got pregnant. So of course, the commentary says, yeah, she didn't get pregnant because she is a tzedeket, she's a righteous woman, but she's a daughter of a wicked man. And Yitzchak is a righteous man, but he's a son of a righteous man. Therefore, his prayer was more powerful. Therefore, she was able to get pregnant. But the Zohar says, no, you got it wrong. Rivka's prayers were so powerful that every time that she would pray to get a child, all the barren women in the generation will get pregnant. That the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, if I'm going to give her a child, she's going to stop praying. And then I know how many women are going to suffer. So I'm going to prevent her from getting a child. Therefore, she's going to continue praying with real tears. And now all the women of the generation that are barren will get pregnant. And at some point, the Kadosh Baruch Hu had some rachamim and he gave her a child. But you see what a power of a prayer of a woman is. It's not about a matter if she's a daughter of a righteous person or of a wicked person. Women's prayers are much more powerful. That's why you see women get together in a group to read Tehillim. You don't see that with men. You know what a group of women sitting together and reading Tehillim? You know what it means? A group of women getting together and they do what's called afrashat challah, taking out the dough out of the bread. The point is to take from it is very, very simple, that each and every one of you is an extremely holy soul, much more holier than anybody else, and you have to understand it and utilize it. Now, if you don't understand it, then you're not going to bring it into action. But if you understand your role and how holy you are, you're going to hold yourself in a holy way. You're going to make sure that you're talking and behaving in a holy way. And not anybody can have access to you. You know, many people come to our door. They want to talk to me. Find out where I live. They just knock on the door. I want to talk to the rabbi. So sometimes my wife opens the door. And she tells me, now I'm stuck with somebody starts talking to me. I don't want to talk to them. It's not my place to start talking with anyone who just walks into the door. Not because she doesn't want to talk to that person, because it's not her place. She was like, my words and everything that belongs to me, it only belongs to my husband. It doesn't belong to anybody else. If I start sharing my radiation, my holiness with anybody else in the world, then what is going to be left for my husband? Why would my husband find favor in me if I start giving it around to everybody else? That's unfortunately, if you want to translate it to our generation, and excuse how I talk and my language, but when men go and cheat, is because they don't find favor enough in their wife. Why? Because the spark that the woman has was taken away by somebody else. That's why a lot of people have problems with getting married. You ask why with getting married. A lot of problems with people have when they're getting married, that's unfortunate. We talked about it 2 days ago for the young crowd. It's because if I have something special and I just give it away for free, for doesn't matter if it's from the kindness of my heart or from my stupidity, but then when I have to actually use it, I don't have it because it was already taken away. And a woman is a diamond. And if she gives out herself to just any person, doesn't matter in physical and spiritual and mental, then if somebody takes that shine away from her, then when it comes for her husband to look at the shine, he can't find it. He doesn't recognize it. That's how it works. If you want to look at it in a mystical way. Because why does a couple have attraction to each other? Why? Why does this guy get attracted to this girl and this girl gets attracted to that guy? Why? You can blame it because I like a brunette, she likes this. No. Every human being has a godly spark. A very special godly spark. And a husband and wife, it's the same soul. So they recognize the spark. Something attracts them. And then they get attracted to each other. We translate it that it's the physical that attracted me. No. It's something very spiritual that attracted me, that made me look at her and not at another 100 people. The problem is that if this spark is all rubbed, how am I going to recognize her? How she's going to recognize me? That's the problem in our generation, that people find it very hard to get married. Why? The spark was rubbed too many times. Now it doesn't shine so good. So you walk in the street, how do I know? She's the one, she's the one, she's the one. I don't know, I don't recognize it. How am I going to explain more? The point is that this is what I said now, maybe more goes to somebody before they're married, but also in your marriage, you want to keep a spark. You want to make sure that there's still an attraction. You're going to be 60, doesn't matter. Attraction has nothing to do with age. And when couples start, you know, fighting, is not because they don't get along, or one of them is sloppy, or the other one is messy, or all these nonsense. The attraction, the spark, is not a good ignite. If you look at anything in this world, in order to create something, you have to take two entities and rub them together. That's the nature of this world. I can hold a match, and I can hold the part on the box. I can hold them like that, I'll never have fire. I have to strike them together. Only when you rub something together, what's called in Hebrew chikuch, then I'm able to produce something new. You can take now two empty bottles and put in one bottle gas that is called oxygen. And then you put in another bottle hydrogen. Put them in two different bottles, it's two gases. Now take one from the oxygen and two from the hydrogen and put them together. Whoop! You have a drop of water. How? Because you put them two together. There was some type of a friction between them. So same thing with the husband and wife. Has to be what's called a chikuch. And if you don't have that, then you're not going to have the attraction, the spark. So we kind of sidetracked, but it is important because what happens is that people, when they don't understand their role, they don't even know how to continue to apply it. And a woman's role is very, very special. It's very, very unique. And if a woman knows how to hold herself in a certain way, she controls everything in the house. She's akeret habayit. She's the ikar of the bayit. Everything comes from the woman. Everything. I said before, the parnasa, the briyut, the ladim, the weddings, everything is in the zchut, in the merit of the woman. And if the woman is holding herself as a queen, and she behaves like a queen, like a holy queen, then she becomes a channel, that through that she can influence to her husband. That's her role. The woman in this world is in the level of the sfirah of malchut. She's just a queen. But if she elevates herself to the sfirah, or the level of bina, then she can start being a mashpia to her husband. That's why Bina is above all the Sefirot, and the Bina is what's giving to the rest of the Sefirot to her husband. So ultimately, it all depends on you. But it depends how you walk, how you talk, how you dress, how you think, how you behave, everything. A woman is a queen. Now, if a queen holds herself as a queen, she'll be respected as a queen. But if she doesn't hold herself as a queen, that's a problem, because a lot of women have a very low self-esteem for whatever reason. The point is that the woman is the head, she's the highest. Your part is to be able to elevate yourself to that level. And you're only going to be able to elevate yourself to that level if you follow what the Torah tells you. If you follow what the Torah tells you, you by default be elevated to that level. You can take now a daughter of a king and put her in the street with tight clothes. She doesn't going to be anymore behaving like a daughter of a king. But if you put her in the right environment, then she's going to behave like the daughter of a king. Completely off the subject, but somebody showed me not too long ago a video of the daughter of the president in a party, dressed half naked, drunk, or smoking drugs, and a whole big shy, ooh, the daughter of the president, smoking drugs and drunk and dancing. 99% of the young girls do it. What's the difference between her and all the girls? Not that I'm agreeing with this behavior, but she's the daughter of the president. So all the media is around the daughter of the president. She's a normal girl, like any other girl that wants to go to a party. And again, I'm not agreeing with this behavior. I'm just giving an example. So you are a daughter of a king. The king of the world, not the king of a country. The king of all kings. Melech Malchei HaMelechim. And each and every one of you is a daughter of a king. So you have to hold yourself like the daughter of a king, and behave like a daughter of a king, and talk like a daughter of a king, and be dressed like a daughter of the king. And Bezat Hashem, if you internalize and understand and realize your role in the world, then you apply it. And then when you apply it, then you're actually elevating and inspiring and empowering yourself. By default, everything else will fall into place. So you have problems with the parnasah, don't worry. You do what you need to do. It will come in the right way. You want to marry your kids off? You hold yourself in a certain way. You behave in a certain way. You make sure that you run the house the right way. And everything is the woman. You think when I walk into the kitchen and I eat and my wife puts me something on the table, I ask her if it's kosher? I don't ask her if it's kosher. I have 100% trust in her. I put my 100% trust in my wife that what she's putting on the table, she's giving me a kosher meal. I don't ask her. If I would ask her, it means I have zero respect to her. But I don't. I trust her and I respect her, and I know she's not. She's going to be sharp. So the woman is way more important than the husband. And don't let the physicality of the world fool you. It's not like that. And a very important advice, don't go home now and tell this to your husband. You're going to have a problem if you tell. Yeah, I have a whole club of husbands that want to kill me. There's a price on my head. I have a group of husbands, they don't like me. What are you doing to my wife? You're making my wife holy, I don't like it. So not that I'm telling you that because I need more people to hate me. I'm just telling you that that's not going to be the solution how you actually get something done. But there's a saying in Chazal that says, "Ezu isha chachama, ha'osa et ratzon ba'ala." Who is a wise woman who does the will of her husband? Now, of course, many women come and say, "Oh, again, you're putting me down. I have to do his will." But no, it says, "Ezu isha chachama." Who's the real smart woman that does the real will of the husband? He doesn't know what his will. He thinks that his will is to get up in the morning and make more money, or to go and hang out with his friends, or watch a football game, or whatever. His real will is to be connected to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So a smart woman, she manipulates everything in a way that the real will of her husband is going to come to fruition. And it's in her power to make sure that her husband wakes up in the morning and goes and prays in a minyan. Go and learn Torah now. Somebody comes, yeah, give him tzedakah. He has to get it. Go learn Torah. Go teach the kids. Go do this. But if she does it in a fighting way, nothing's going to happen. You know, in the entire Torah, we see how women were able to conquer worlds with a little bit of a soft woman touch. You know the miracle of Hanukkah? People think and they give all the credit to the soldiers, to the Maccabim. You know, because who we won the war? Because of a woman. Her name was Yehudit. She went to the Caesar with a bottle of wine, a little bit of cheese. Hey, how are you? Huh? Yeah. And she got him into the mood, a little bit of wine, a little bit of cheese, and she chopped his head off. And that's it. You know, women can use their wisdom, their bina yetera, to manipulate the world to wherever they want. Just make sure that you're using it to the right way and not to the wrong way. So just understand and take from this shiur how holy you are and how special you are and how great you are. You look in Hashem's eyes and that you are a princess, a daughter of a king, and hold yourself like a daughter of the king and behave like a daughter of the king. And the Ramban says, "Hashpel tatzmecha v'inasecha amakom." Make yourself humble. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to raise you up to levels that you can't even imagine. But the more you humble yourself, the greater the Kadosh Baruch Hu will make you. That's why women dafka got the mitzvah of modesty. You know what a woman does with modesty? A man takes all the mitzvot that the man has to do. A woman does it with modesty. It's not to suppress the woman. It's you hide a gem. You want to cover the gem. You want to cover the Torah. You don't give it to anyone. This is a gem. And when you behave in that level, that's when the Kadosh Baruch Hu really elevates you. And then you're not going to come to me with questions. How do I marry off my kids? How do I get married? Why do I don't have Shalom Bayit? Why do I know this? Because the woman is holding the key to everything. And that's why our sages say, a smart woman who does the will of her husband. Because the real will for the husband is to follow the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because the husbands, men are like kids. It's very easy to entertain a man. Give him just a nice car, he's all excited. That's it. Put him in front of a big screen, he loses his focus. Men are big kids, that's what they are. They just have, you know, small kids have small toys and big kids have big toys. That's the difference. That's why a woman comes from Bina. She has a very extra part into her. So Bezad Hashem, what you take from today is that you realize... What you need to take from today is when you wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror, and you don't say to yourself, oh, another miserable day of my life. Rather, you say to yourself, wow, I'm a princess. I'm a princess. I'm a daughter of a king. So what am I dressing today? Am I dressing like a daughter of a king, or am I dressing like a daughter of the maid? And how am I going to talk? And how am I going to walk? And how am I going to behave? And the more you connect yourself to your source, that's how you get empowered. You don't get empowered by anything. Women, you know, they're compared to like a flower. They don't get a little bit of water, they wither right away. You put now beautiful flowers now, take them out of water, they die in a day. And the Torah is water. You take away the Torah from a woman, she withers right away. And she thinks that, you know, that person hurt her, this person did something bad to her. The sadness that a woman is carrying in her is not because anything around her, something affected her. It's because the soul is missing something. The soul is missing the power of the Torah, the water. That's why you feel this sadness or this emptiness deep down inside. It's not because you didn't marry off a child, or because that business deal didn't work out. It's because something inside is missing. And that's something that Isani is missing. That's your soul telling you, I need something here. I need some food here. The same way that you don't forget to eat and you don't forget to drink and you don't forget to breathe. Don't eat for a whole day. You're going to be sick. Don't sleep for a day. You're going to be exhausted and tired. Your soul needs the exact same thing. Your soul needs Torah and mitzvot. And if you don't give your soul Torah and mitzvot, then your soul will start nagging you from inside. So it's going to come as sadness or depression. or anxiety, or can't sleep, or can't wake up, or all these things. And then everybody blames the world. Oh, I'm depressed because of this. I'm sad because of that. No. It's the soul. It's the soul that is not happy. It's not happy. It's quiet. And then, you know what? Then you go to the doctor and he tells you, here, take this pill. Everything will be okay. And everybody's zombies in this world because they're running on pills. That doesn't work. That's just covering. That's a plaster. That's covering a band-aid. Covering the wound. The problem is that the soul is the one who's crying. The pill is not going to help. Nothing else is going to help. People go and spend thousands of dollars on all sorts of healing, schmealing, psychiatrists, all this nonsense. Another dress, another car. It's all nonsense. The soul doesn't care about that. The soul needs Torah. The soul needs mitzvot. You feed your soul what it needs to get, you're not going to have any issues. So we started the class with that there's such a misconception in our generation that everything became already so distorted that people think that what's going to make them happy is actually the things that makes them the most not happy. Because anything in the physical world is a very instant gratification and that's it and it's over. You go to a restaurant, you enjoy the good meal for 1 hour and that's it. And then besides a big bill, you don't remember anything. You go on a vacation, so for 1 week you enjoy yourself, if you're lucky, and then the vacation is over and you go back to your reality and left with a very big bill. So you remodel your home so you're happy for 2 months. That's it. Then you're bored with the color. You buy a new car so you're happy for 1 month and then you're bored with this car. Now you're stuck with a 3-year lease. So everything in this world, we try to find this instant gratification, but it only feeds me for a few minutes or a few hours, a few days, and then it passes away. It finishes. It's like a shot of coffee. Coffee doesn't wake you up. It does the complete opposite. Yeah, you get a shot for 15 minutes, you're a little bit awake, but that's it. Caffeine actually makes your body weak and sleepy. Yeah. You get a shot, it does a boost of adrenaline, and that's it. So the same thing in this world. We're constantly looking for these instant gratifications. But what it does, it feeds a balloon of empty air, just air. And then I'm looking for another thing that will excite me, and another thing that will make me happy, and another thing. But honestly, each and every one of you, if you want to be honest with yourself, there's something deep down inside that is bothering you. Some void in the neshama. So one will blame it, okay, the business is not working out. That's an excuse. Another one will blame it, I have a very bad relationship with my husband. Another one will blame it, my child is dating a Goya. And everyone will find an excuse what to blame it on. But that's a very childish way to deal with the world, is to find excuses. Children, they point the finger, it's your fault. But the reality is that each and every one of us has a hole in our soul, and that's what's making you unhappy. And you'll never be happy if you're not fulfilling this hole. That's how it is. And a lot of people don't like to face the reality, but that is the reality. And this world, the Zohar calls this world Alma de Shikra, the world of lie. Everything is a lie here. Everything is deceiving here. Everything is shining in this world and glittery and beautiful colors, and inside is a balloon of air. The point is that this world is lying to us, constantly lying to us. And a smart person goes a little step above the world and he sees that, okay, you know what? Nothing in this world is actually going to give me my real, true happiness. And a lot of people have problems with Shalom Bayit, with their relationship with the husband and the wife, and they blame it on many different things. There's only one thing to blame it on. That the spark between the husband and the wife is so rubbed off that they start hating each other. That's it. There's nothing else wrong. And this spark that is being robbed off is because you don't feed the spark to shine constantly. Torah and mitzvot. Because your soul shine. Your soul is compared to light. Everything holy is compared to light. Now if you take now, you know, the lights in the room and there's a dimmer. You put it full power, then you have a lot of light. take the dimmer and put it all the way down, then it starts becoming dimmer and dimmer and dimmer, and then there's barely any light. So if you boost your neshama with Torah and mitzvot, then neshama shines. So everybody around you feels this shine. And everybody wants to stand next to you. Wow, you look so beautiful today. But I didn't do anything. Yeah, I prayed for 5 minutes in the morning. So I'm radiating. That's a whole different thing. Techa will take questions and answers and we'll address that too. But the point is that a lot of people say, oh, my husband doesn't find favor in me anymore. He's looking at everything that moves. Yeah, then the problem is in you, not in him. Very simple. You're shine. You're not shining. If you shine, he's going to look at you. He doesn't need to look at anything else. I told you, men are like kids. You know, now, it was before I came here, I talked to my kids on Skype. I'm now 3 weeks away from home, so I'm talking with my oldest daughter, and then the younger one walks in. So she's 3 years old. I can't have a conversation with her. So I tell her, to get into a conversation, that I bought her a surprise, and I have a beautiful present for her, and she gets all excited. Wow, what is it? I'm like, no, it's a surprise. And so we get into a conversation, but at least she's now excited because her father has got her a surprise. So the older daughter tells me, what did you get her? Oh, nothing. I didn't get anything. She was like, why didn't you get her? And I told her, don't worry, I'll bring her a lollipop. She'll be more than happy. I don't have to bring anything else. A minute before I land, I'll buy a blue and pink lollipop. That's it. I won her world. I brought her a beautiful, shiny lollipop. That's what she cares about.
Three.
One is, well, the one doesn't talk, but I'm talking about the three-year-old. So the older one, she didn't understand why I'm telling her I bought her something. Because in the mind of a three-year-old, just the fact that her father has a surprise for her, now for 2 weeks she's excited because I have a surprise. And you think she's expecting a convertible Mercedes? No! She'll be happy with a pink lollipop that costs 25 cents, more than anything. Because kids, they see the truth. You can come now to a kid with a $100,000 check in one hand and a 25 cent lollipop, and you tell the kid which one you want, they'll take the lollipop. The check is a piece of paper, has no value. That's the emet, that's the truth. You know why the kid wants the lollipop? Because it's emet, he can feel it. I can taste now the taste. It's good for me. I'm getting some gratification here. A piece of paper, you can throw this piece of paper to the garbage. So you want to learn the reality and the truth of the world, just look at kids. Kids appreciate the real thing. They appreciate what the little things that mean a lot. So my daughter gets excited from the fact that I'm bringing her a surprise. It can be a little lollipop and that's it. And she'll appreciate it way more than anything else. Kids like the little things, but they mean a lot. They have a lot of meaning and they have a lot of substance and they come with love and affection. You know how the problem in our generation is that the kids are bought off. Very few people, very few parents, they have patience to the kid, and when the kid comes and asks them something, they actually listen. In our generation, they give them a box, a little box that does a lot of noise. Here, take an iPhone. Shut up. Here, take an iPad. Don't bother me. And the kids are hypnotized into a screen. They don't even know how their father looks. So kids are bought in our generation with plastic things, with all sorts of material things. And they're shut down. But the reality is that's how we are. You just look at how the world is conducting. A parent shuts the kid with all sorts of materialistic things. So we shut ourselves, our neshama. My neshama talks to me, tells me I need you to pray right now. No, here, take a new dress. Here, let's go on a vacation. And Shema says, I don't care about a new dress. I don't need another pair of shoes. I don't need another fancy meal. I need 10 minutes, Ritalin. I need some air. And then people complain that the inside is a turmoil of a storm inside. So the bottom line is, we got a little bit sidetracked from our topic, but even that is also not less important. The point is that you have a soul that is so holy that needs to be nourished. And the soul of the woman is a much higher soul than the soul of the male. Comes from a much higher place, the soul of a woman. So you need to feed that holy soul, and you need to give that soul its sustenance. And you need to treat the soul like it's a child of a king. And you have to understand that. You have to look in the mirror every day when you wake up and say, I'm a princess. I'm a princess. I'm a daughter of a king. How should I hold myself? How should I conduct myself? How should I educate my kids? How should I talk to my husband? And when you do that, when you follow this way of holding yourself, then everything will fall into place already. I'm not saying it's an easy thing that you just wake up tomorrow morning and that's it, I'm a princess and everything is back to normal. But the point is that you have to, first of all, in order to find a solution to problems, you have to recognize the problem. And the problem is that you're focusing on the wrong target. If you're focusing on the right target, you'll hit the point. But most people are focusing on the wrong target. Is how I look and how I talk and who do I hang out with and how does my house look and how does my car look and how is... Not that I'm saying there's something wrong. You want to be dressed nice, you want to have a nice home. These are all good things. But it's not the target. It's not the main thing. The main thing is your neshama. And when you focus on your neshama, on your soul, then you really get the real ultimate happiness because inside you're happy. Doesn't matter how much money you have. Where I live, people don't have nothing. Everybody's smiling there. You think that everybody's high. Everybody's happy, smiling. It's not the mountain air. It's just they're simple. Their neshama is happy. So they don't care if the car is big, it's not big, a big house, small house. It's a happy town. Everybody's smiling. Why? Because the neshama is smiling. That's it. That's what you want. You want the true happiness. And you know what? When your neshama gets everything that it needs, everything falls in place. The kids get married, no problems. The parnasa comes exactly when it needs to come. Everything happens the way it needs to happen. And when things that are not so positive happen, that's part of the process. This world is mixed with good and bad. It has to be some bad. That's the normal, that's part of this world. Everything in this world is mixed with bad. That came down when Adam and Chava sinned. Everything was good. But then they brought the sin into the world and they mixed it. This is what's called Sod Etz Hadaat, the secret of tree of knowledge. Tovera, good and bad. So we mixed with the bad. Mashiach is going to come soon, he's going to remove the bad out and we're going to be back to only good. But the reality is that it all points only the good. There's not going to be anything bad. There's not going to be hate, there's not going to be jealousy, there's not going to be sicknesses, there's not going to be war, there's not going to be death. We're not going to need lawyers, we're not going to need doctors. There's not going to be hospitals. There's not going to be lawsuits. No, everything is going to be good. Bezrat Hashem, what you should take from this short class today when you leave this door, and that you have to realize how holy you are and how special you are. And what do you do to utilize it? And what do you do to bring it down to action? And you want to follow what the Torah tells you. And if the Torah tells you to be holy, then be holy. And the Torah tells you to eat kosher, then you eat kosher. And the Torah tells you to keep Shabbat, keep Shabbat. That's where everything is in. Don't think you're going to lose something out if you don't drive for 24 hours. It's fine. Don't think you're going to lose anything out if you follow the Torah, what the Torah tells you. It's not so hard as it seems. It's the real sustenance. It's the difference between eating a good steak and a little piece of, I don't know, like a cracker. The Torah has everything in it. And more than that, the ultimate happiness that a person gets is only if the soul is happy. So you make your decision. Like I told this young lady that I told her, you want to get married and keep Shabbat. And she told me it's hard. So I told her, okay, you choose which one is hardest. Is it harder to keep Shabbat or is it harder to be lonely? You choose. Either way, you have to choose something. So Bezrat Hashem, Hashem should bless you all. That you will be naturally elevated to a much higher level and you realize how special and holy you are. And with that you will receive the abundance and endless blessing of the Kadosh Baruch Hu for health and wealth and Ahavat Yisrael and chinuch of the kids and shlom bayit and parnasah and everything that you wish for yourself should be in an abundance and should be in an easy and a clear way. And Bezrat Hashem, Bezchut Nashim Tzadkaniot, with the merit of righteous women, we went out of Mitzrayim, out of the exile of Egypt. So בזכות נשים צדקניות נצא גם מהגלות הזאת. With the righteous women, we're going to leave this exile. So we're putting all the faith in you. And every little thing that you do, you have a responsibility for the entire Klal Israel. And 10 minutes a day when you sit and read Tehillim, you are now saving hundreds of other people. And helping hundreds and thousands of other people. When you read now 10 minutes Tehillim, you're probably saving a person on the other side of the world. That you don't even know who it is. And he has to, chas v'shalom, almost goes into a car accident. Oh, Baruch Hashem, Ness, a miracle happened. The car moved. Because somebody on the other world that doesn't even know him read now Tehillim or did a mitzvah. That's why you see when chas v'shalom, when there's a war in Israel, everybody reads Tehillim. Why? Because your Tehillim and your prayers and your mitzvah and your tzedakah, it helps another person on the other side of the world. You don't do it for yourself. You do it for Klal Israel, for the entire nation of Israel. But the point is that your prayers and your mitzvot are so powerful, you don't do it in a superficial and selfish way. You do it for Klal Israel, for everybody. And Bezrat Hashem, Hashem should bless you. You should be successful in everything that you do.